Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite teams here on The Fan.
Call his wife, and it is a good morning on this Monday morning, 405. Taking your calls at 888-808-1019. And the New York Knicks on a Sunday afternoon in Detroit take care of business, lead the series 3-1. And we, you know, we'll start with the end as, you know, we open the show with this too, but we'll start with the end Christopher Nolan or Quentin Tarantino. And obviously the final call, I mean, the Knicks played this entire series has been crazy physical. We understand, I mean, at times the refereeing of the series has been fine by me. I mean, we all love the physicality. We all love going back to the 90s and watching it. But, I mean, we have seen the third quarter in this game, the Knicks could not get to the basket. They just couldn't get to the basket. I mean, they were completely being mugged. There was zero calls. Like, zero. I know this Pistons team likes to, or has recently had a little fun and compared themselves to the Bad Boys team. Well, it felt like everybody on the Knicks had the Jordan rules, and there was no whistle. And so that's why at the end of this game, and I know that's the controversy, the real story is the toughness of this Knicks team. Karl Anthony Towns hitting big shot after big shot, hitting that fadeaway baseline shot that looked like he shot it over the backboard or the big three to give them the one-point lead with 40 seconds left. And just the way he's played, the mentality he's brought. Right? Getting rid of this notion that he's this soft player. Right? We talk about, and we'll get into Devin Williams, but like players who, you know, it doesn't matter what they did prior. It's all about what they do here. Well, we could forget all of the soft stuff and his MO and what went on in Minnesota. Because I know he had a bad second half in game two. Other than that, and especially yesterday, I mean, this guy where, you know, Mitch Robinson only played 9 minutes because of his, you know, because of an illness. Like, he was able to, I mean, defensively, off huge shots, off-balance shots, getting to the basket. I mean, just, he was so clutch for this team. And then, of course, Brunson leaves with the injury, comes back, leads the team in the fourth quarter, getting huge baskets, getting to the basket, hitting big threes. I mean, turning this game around early on, you know, the Knicks and the Pistons couldn't hit a damn shot. I mean, the Knicks should have been up. They're up as many as 16 at one point. There's a sequence where, you know, Brunson misses a layup, and then the Pistons go on a run and take a 16-point lead and cut it down to 7 at halftime, which was disappointing with how the Pistons played and how terribly offensively they were to only have a 7-point lead. But the way this game was officiated, for the Pistons to have a complaint about the end of the game is laughable to me. Like, we all watched it. If you haven't seen it, the Knicks obviously win a 94-93 game. And in the final seconds, a loose rebound, you know, kind of squirts out to the corner. And Hardaway Jr. has a look at a three, goes in the air. Hart comes over to try and defend it, gets off his feet, and absolutely bumps him with his hip. And under normal circumstances, in a normal game in November, December, January, that is a foul. Right? And the league has already come out and announced they should have called a foul, that it was a foul. If they do that for the whole game, you would have to correct every other play. This series has been umpired or refereed as if you have to practically knock someone on their ass if you want to get a foul call. And in the third quarter specifically, as the Knicks lost Brunson to the injury, as the Pistons were turning a 7-point deficit into as much as a 10-point lead, a lot of it was built on the back of the Knicks being unable to get to the basket as they're getting mugged on almost every play. And when I say mugged, do I mean literally mugged? No. But fouls in today's game, without question. So if you tell me, like, if your takeaway, if you're either a Pistons fan, a Pistons coach, or a Knicks hater, and your takeaway from the end of that game and that sequence and that shot is that it's a travesty, that it's a foul, and that this game should have been decided by Hardaway Jr. at the line for 3 shots, I think you are crazy. That has to be a no call the way that game was refereed. the amount of contact and fouling that was allowed to take place, which is fine, and I think it was fair. I know I'm talking about the Knicks being mugged trying to go to the basket, but there were plenty of fouls that the Knicks committed that weren't, the whistle wasn't blown. I have no problem with the way the game was refereed, other than it was extremely physical, and all we want is consistency. And if the Knicks would have lost this game, I wouldn't have been complaining. I wouldn't have opened the show saying, oh my God, how did they not get fouls in the third quarter? That's why they lost this game. I wouldn't have been blaming the refs. But if the Pistons are seriously going to complain that that foul was not called in that moment, that you wanted the referees in a game where they allowed everything all night or all afternoon, that they should have put Hardaway at the line for three shots with the Knicks having a one-point lead with hardly any time on the clock and let that decide the game, you are out of your mind. That foul call would have been a greater injustice than the non-foul call was for the Pistons. I think we all agree it's a foul. But watch this game, and I'd run out of finger and toes before I'd get to how many fouls were not called in this game. This is not about that miscall. That is not about that non-call. That's the absolute right non-call. Anything else would have been a disaster. And don't tell me, oh, it's bad. Look for the NBA. Oh, it should have been this. It should have been that. It's complete. Hey, a foul's a foul. Nonsense. Not with the way that game was played. Anyone who has a complaint about that foul, you are being unfair, and you are a Knick hater or a Pistons fan or biased in some way, because I firmly believe this is a fair take, and there is no Knick bias here. I agree, it's a foul. You cannot call it. You cannot decide that physical game at the free throw line. But this Knick team that we question so much, once we get past that nonsense, this Knick team that we have so many questions about their toughness, about their defense, about their grittiness, about, you know, we all know Brunson and what he's capable of at the end of the game, but we're so mindful of what even Mikal Bridges hits, two enormous three-pointers in the corner. Now, he's been terrible, and in the first half, he missed every freaking shot. I mean, every one. He hits one that barely hits the rim. Somehow it comes back out to him for another three-pointer, and in the span of, like, 3.5 seconds, he pretty much throws up two air balls. Like, he was horrendous at times this game. He's been brutal in this series. But even he comes through with two dagger threes in the corner. And Karl Anthony Towns, who has this MO of being soft, I mean, they have not. He's hitting enormous shots. He's hitting clutch shots. He's hitting off-balance shots. He's hitting dagger threes from 6 feet behind the line. And he has not backed off an inch. Like, the Pistons have played a smothering brand of defensive basketball. They have been all over the Knicks. They've been physical. They've been in their face. And the Knicks and this team that we question their toughness, and we, especially when we compare them to last year's team, this Knicks team has not backed down for a second. They have matched every bit of physicality with this Pistons team. And that was a gutty, gritty win with their captain walking off, and who didn't think, like, let's be totally honest, when he gets hurt, it looks bad enough. He's laying on the ground. He's sitting on the ground. They come out to look on him. He's pointing to his ankle, and you're like, oh, geez, here we go. And then I don't remember if you saw it before the break, but I know I saw it after. They go to commercial break. They come back, and they show the clip of him walking off, and then they show the clip of him trying to stand up initially and going right back down, and you're like, well, he's gone. Brunson is gone for the game, for sure. He might be done for the rest of the series, and even if they're able to squeak out another two wins, after losing this one, clearly, even if they can squeak out another two wins against the Detroit Pistons, they're screwed moving forward. And there he comes, off the bench, back out, checks in, and not only, you know, gives it the old college try, absolutely puts the team on his back, along with Karl Anthony Towns, along with some big shots from Mikal Bridges, but gets to the basket, hits big threes, shows why he is Mr. Clutch in the NBA and why he's arguably the best closer in the NBA. And they turn a 10-point deficit in the fourth quarter after being, you know, after turning a 16-point lead into a 10-point deficit from the end of the first half into the fourth quarter and come back with big shot and big stops. And to me, this was one of those games. This is the gut check game of the series for me, right? And totally honest, their compete level in Detroit has been far better than it was the first two games in New York. Because you could argue the first two games, the Pistons were the better team for every minute of it, except the 5 minutes in the fourth quarter when the Knicks went on a 21-0 run. Other than that brief moment in time where the Knicks could do no wrong and the Pistons kept turning the ball over, like other than that, and they turned the ball over a ton, and what, they have 9 first-half turnovers? They were throwing the ball all over the place in the first half. The Knicks should have had a far better lead than 7 at the half the way the Pistons played in that first half, but they came out roaring in the second half. But, I mean, a lot of the games, the two games in New York, the Pistons had the better of play. It's really felt like the Knicks came out with a different intensity on the road in Detroit, and even this game, down 10, with the uncertainty of their superstar, he comes back, and the Knicks go on a gritty, tough run, hitting big shot after big shot. And Karl Anthony Towns, after a quiet second half of game two, where everybody was questioning him and going back to his time in Minnesota, and he's soft, and if he doesn't show up the next day, I mean, we expect more from him. He's got to demand the ball. It's not Brunson's fault that they're playing this kind of way. He's the only one who can create his own shot. What is he supposed to do? All that noise about Brunson, which was fair. I mean, about Cat, which was fair. He has responded these two games in Detroit, and what a shot, what a three to put them up one late in this game. And this team that we question a lot about, right? We question, hell, everything we question kind of has been answered. Now, again, it's the Pistons. They're up 3-1. They're better than the Pistons. They should win this series, and it's what they do next. But I feel like the Pistons have really put up a good performance, and the Knicks have matched it. And I actually feel better, even though it's been hard-fought games, I feel better about this team than if they would have just blown out this team. I'll be honest with you. If the Pistons wouldn't have put up a fight, wouldn't have played like this, and the Knicks had their way of it, I don't know how I'd feel moving to. I feel better that they've been tested like this. And I feel better about Karl Anthony Towns in moments like this when he's tested. And I think we've learned a lot about this Knicks team. Now, I'm not saying that puts them on level with the Boston Celtics or that they have a better chance of winning that series now. I'm just saying I feel like they're tougher than we gave them credit for. Because you had to be tough to win these games. You have to be. You have to be resilient. You have to be tough. You have to be clutch. And you have to be physical. And they've answered all that. Even the minutes, right? We complain about the minutes, me more than anybody else. You know, I've complained about Tibbs and his coaching style. I thought Tibbs after game two was the main reason they lost. And I think he's done a better job in 3 and 4. And the offense clearly has been different and more flowing and more passing and more creating from other players and not just hero ball from Brunson. But even the minute police that I'm a part of and everyone's a part of, that, you know, hell, Bridges is a part of. We're concerned about them, you know, running out of gas. And yes, it's only the first round and it's only been 4 games, but they have been the better team in the fourth quarter in every one of these games. Every single one. Even game 2 loss, they still had to have a rousing comeback to make it even close. They tied the game at one point. They were down 11. They have been the better fourth quarter team. They've made less mistakes in the fourth quarter. They've hit more shots. They've looked, you know, like they've had better legs. They've been the better fourth quarter team. And that, I mean, even that, even the question mark of how they're going to handle that with all the minutes that Tibbs plays and the lack of bench time and everything like that, they've been the better fourth quarter team. So their toughness, I feel, has gotten a positive answer. Karl Anthony Towns has gotten a positive answer. We all know what Brunson is, but toughness, defense, grittiness, and even, you know, durability and legs in the fourth quarter after all the minutes they played this year, all of them have been a positive answer, and that was an enormous win. They take a 3-1 decisive lead in this series, looking to wrap it up at the Garden on Tuesday night. 888-808-1019. But yeah, please, if you watch that game, if you watch that entire game, not just, you know, saw the highlights on ESPN, if you watch that entire game, specifically the third quarter, and you think that that foul should have been called at the end of the game, and you think that the best way to decide that basketball game was off that minimal contact. Now, it's enough contact to be a foul. I think we all agree, and the NBA agrees. They've already come out and said it should have been a foul. If you think the best thing for that game and the best representation of how that game was played and what should have happened at the end of that game was to put Hardaway at the line for 3 shots to win the game at the foul line, when everyone, including the Pistons coach, is complaining about the amount of foul shots. I mean, he's complaining that Cunningham doesn't get enough. Cunningham only went to the floor four times. He makes it sound Brunson went twice. Carl Anthony Towns went twice. Mitchell Robinson went four, missed all of them. But like the idea that the Knicks were getting all these fouls and the Pistons weren't, it's ridiculous. Nobody was calling fouls. You cannot put the game on that whistle at the end. I'm sorry. If you think that, you're just being unfair. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Limo Driver Ed. What's up, Ed?
Hey, brother. How you doing? I tell you one thing. People may want to complain about Tibbs, but I tell you one thing. That young, them young guys yesterday, they had their hands on their knees on that fourth quarter. Knicks are all over the place. I think Tibbs, he gets the guys prepared, man. I understand about the level of everything, but he does get these guys prepared for the fourth quarter. Because I watched,
yeah, listen,
and you can see the guys.
No doubt. They were the better team. They had the better legs. They've been the better team in every game in the fourth quarter. I mean, unless you're just being a curmudgeon, the reason that we complain about the minutes is we're worried about fourth quarters and games like this. That's the reason we complain about the minutes. And they've been the better team in the fourth quarter in every single game. Now, again, it's only four games.
Right.
And if you want to get to where ultimately the Knicks want to go, you got to play a hell of a lot more games than four. So we'll see. I'm not saying that question's been answered necessarily, but so far, there's no doubt who the better team in the fourth quarter has been. And that's the team that's played more minutes over the course of the year.
That's true. And I tell you one thing, they want to complain about fouls. Well, they've been going to the foul line more than anything else. But also, too, tell my man to start the clock the way it's supposed to go.
Because
the Knicks would have lost that game.
I mean, thank you, Ed. I don't even want to talk about that. We did that Friday morning. Yes, that would have been a disaster. But no, absolutely. I think the bitching from the Pistons about the foul call is absurd. Now, look, in the moment, you're pissed off, you lost, and you say, hey, it was a foul, and you're not wrong when you say it, so I get it. But get the hell out of here. Did you see the third quarter? Honestly, they were getting back into that game and taking over that game based on the idea that the Knicks were not allowed to get to the basket. I'm not complaining, right? I'm just stating a fact. That's how the game was refereed. I thought it was a bit much. I tweeted out, I've never seen a no fouls allowed game. This is interesting. And it was for them too. I think it was, I don't think any team had the advantage. I think it was, consistently umpired or refereed as if fouls weren't going to be called. But in that third quarter specifically, without Brunson, the Knicks were trying to get to the basket. Karl Anthony Towns was trying to get to the basket. OG Anunoby was trying to get to the basket. You were not allowed to get to the basket. They were all over them. All over them. And not a single foul. And there was one sequence where Hart got fouled going to the basket, no call. And then he just started figuring, what the hell? I'll just start slapping and see. I guess they're not calling fouls. And he got called for a foul and he was all pissed off about it. Like, there were no fouls called in the third quarter. They were allowed to absolutely tackle anyone going to the rim. And that's fine because it worked both ways. But you can't tell me that the way that game was officiated, that they should have blown that final whistle and decided the game at the free throw line. You can't tell me that. I'm not listening. Yeah, I mean, you could try and tell me, I suppose. But I'm not going to listen. Dion at the Detroit airport. What's up, Dion?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually on the line to go through TSA.
Oh, were you at the game?
I was at the game. I called you last week and was letting you know that I was coming out here.
Oh, right. I remember now. Yeah, what's going on? How was the trip?
Like you said, it was great. Got a few choice words from Detroit fans after the game. But
sure.
It definitely was an old school game. It's like the referees didn't exist during the third quarter.
Yep.
I got a little nervous when Brunson went off the court.
Oh, did you?
Back.
Yeah, you and everybody, and everybody else.
but the key to the game was that Cat, he stood up.
Yep.
He had a big game because we know what Brunson is going to do.
Yep.
But once he stood up and he started hitting, he hit those shots and he got his points, I knew that the Knicks were going to grind it out and they were going to get the win. And you should have heard the whole arena screaming, oh, that should have been a foul, this and that. No, I think the refs called it like it should. This is playoff basketball.
Absolutely.
And, you know, this is probably the best round or the best series in the whole NBA at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're probably biased, and I'll be honest, I've watched a lot of the other series, but I didn't watch all of them as much as I've watched this series, clearly. But yeah, I mean, it has been, I think it's been a really very interesting series. And I do, you know, we all love the, at least we all claim to love the physical nature of this series. The Denver and LA are tied at 2. I haven't watched as much of that series as I have the Lakers and Timberwolves or the Celtics and Magic, and the Grizzlies are already out. The Thunder have advanced. OKC has already moved on. So, yeah, I mean, you could argue it's the best series. Every game has been extremely contentious. It's been physical. There's no doubt. And, yeah, to me, in a game and a series, really, where we are not calling fouls, if this was officiated differently, if they were calling all the fouls, then, yeah, I think the Pistons would have a better argument, and they should call that foul. They didn't call a damn foul. They don't call anything. You can't end the game like that, honestly. Come on, nobody believes that. You are just a straight-up Knick hater or a Pistons fan if you believe that that foul should have been called. I'm sorry. And don't give me the, hey, a foul's a foul crap. Because watch the third quarter again. There's literally, I would honestly say, there are 20 fouls not called. In the third quarter alone, there are 20 fouls not called. If you're going to play that type of game, you got to play it all the way through.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Diaz on the first base side of the rubber. Rests the glove on his left thigh. Looks into Alvarez. Diaz still staring in. Comes set. The 1-2 pitch. Swung on and missed strike three. Put it in the books. And to the New York Mets, California, here we come.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Yeah, so I'm watching I'm looking at the Detroit Pistons Twitter account and watching some of the clips of Bickerstaff and Hardaway Jr. complaining. Blatant, the Pistons quoted Tim Hardaway with a picture of the foul. Blatant. You guys saw it. Blatant. Okay. And then Bickerstaff is complaining, hey, maybe don't waste your challenge in the first quarter of a 10-8 game on an out-of-bounds off a rebound. Maybe that's not where you want to waste your challenge. Maybe worry about that instead of, I mean, the guy is complaining about that foul, complaining about Cunningham not getting to the line. Are we serious? Nobody got to the line. Nobody. The leading free throw shooter was 6, Hart, and Tobias Harris. That's it. That's it. Like, Brunson got 2 foul shots. You're complaining about your star getting to the line? Get the hell out of here. Like, honestly, come on. There's things to complain about. I get it. And under normal circumstances, clearly that's a foul. Have we watched the game? Like, that's the only thing, man. Let's just be fair. You watched the game. They didn't call a damn thing. And then you would want that game to end on a foul call? And we've seen more blatant fouls. Like, come on. Crazy.
How many games have the Knicks played over the years where Mitchell Robinson has the second most free throw attempts on the team? There can't be that many.
Not many. Yeah, not many where his 0 for 4 was tied for the second most foul shots taken on the team. Oh, no, flat out second. I was looking at the Cunningham took 4 for the Pistons. And, of course, Bridges 0. I mean, he never attacks the basket, but that's fine. That's not his game right now, at least. And he did hit 2 big threes. I'm going to give him a break. But Karl-Anthony Towns was enormous. 888-808-1019. We'll take Jose real quick, and then I want to get into Devin Williams and a little bit of Mets as well. What's up, Jose? How are you, man?
Hey, what's going on, C-Mac? Love the show.
Thanks,
bro, for taking my call.
You got it.
All right. I'm just respectfully disagree, but, sure, you know, I know you're a big fan.
Of course.
Okay, so the foul situation, that was a rugby match. I saw the whole game. That was rugby. I kind of liked it, though. Brought me back old school.
Yeah, that's
I think.
Good.
Yeah, I think the issue isn't the foul itself. Like, had he been going, had one of the Pistons gone to the basket and got fouled and no calls made, that's fine. But when he pump faked him in the air and he bumped him shooting a three, I think that's really what made it worse, because fans now are going to say, well, he didn't even give him a chance to hit a three. You know, bumping somebody shooting a three is different than rough play going for a layup. But I agree.
I don't know if it was a rookie match. Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. And listen, again, was there a foul? I mean, certainly. And, you know, did Brunson get a couple of those where he got the guys up in the air? He went up in the air and then, you know, really leaned into contact. And you got to be straight up in the air, and they weren't. I mean, I'm surprised Brunson got those calls, to be totally honest with you. Look, in that game in particular, this whole series for sure, but this game in particular, again, watch the third quarter. I honestly felt like fouls weren't allowed. Like, that's how it, watching the game, I was like, they're not calling anything. For both teams. Both teams went to the basket and just got their doors blown off and, like, nothing. I mean, they had the, you know, you couldn't even bring the ball up to take a shot and there's no foul call. It was crazy. I'm sorry. I cannot end the game. You better be hacked. He has to come down and literally physically prevent you from releasing the ball if you want to take, get a foul call to end the game. I'm sorry. A little bit of hip contact and him going pretty much straight in the air, like, that's not going to cut it. That would have been far more of a travesty for the Knicks than this is for the Pistons. I'm sorry, it is. To end the game with three easy foul shots with a one-point deficit? No way. Can't give it to him there. Can't give them the game on that foul. Can't. If there's 13 seconds left, I'm more open to it. Literally the end of the game, the last second miracle shot off a ball, off a rebound that's rolling to your feet in the corner, you want to get fouled on that? Like, it's one thing if they set up a play, there's 10 seconds left, he gets a shot off, it's a foul. Like, maybe. The end of a game, a miracle play, the ball bouncing everywhere, it rolls at your feet. You want to just be gifted three foul shots? Absolutely not. Not with the way that game is officiated. No way. You cannot call that foul. I'm sorry. And I honestly believe I would be saying the same thing if I were a Pistons fan, or if it went the other way and it happened to the Knicks. You can't. You cannot officiate that game that way. And then a little where the ball is literally bouncing off people, rolls to your feet. You pick it up and jump up in the air to take a shot. You want to get fouled and get three foul shots to end the game at the foul line? When nobody's gotten to the foul line the entire game? No. No, no, no. Can't happen. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. All right, let's talk real quick. Haven't had a chance to talk about Devin Williams. We're talking a lot of NFL draft. A lot of Knicks off the playoff game, but it is significant that Devin Williams, one of the key pieces of the offseason that, again, this is where my Yankee shill, you know, kicks in, because I'll defend the trade. People have problems with trading for Devin Williams. Like, that's where I have a problem with, but we'll get to that in a second. But yes, Devin Williams blew the game on Friday night. And has now, the Yankees announced earlier yesterday that he is no longer the closer and Weaver will take over. And I know I've been against that. And I've pushed back on the idea of taking Devin Williams out of the closer's role. I tweeted out Friday night. That was finally it for me, because it wasn't so much the inefficiency or the ineffectiveness. It wasn't so much blowing the game. It wasn't even so much losing the game. It was everything about what I saw on the mound from Devin Williams. Devin Williams, I honestly believe he didn't want to be out there. Devin Williams didn't just not be able to locate his fastball and threw a terrible changeup that got hit over the center fielder's head and blew the game. It was more than that. From the beginning, from the first pitch of the first at bat to Springer, he looked like he didn't want to be out there. He has zero confidence right now. Zero confidence in his ability. Zero confidence in himself. He wants no part of being on the mound. That's literally how it looked. And after that performance, I don't think he left the Yankees any choice. They, especially when you have Weaver, who hasn't given up a run yet this season, who was your closer last year into the World Series, you have an easy transition. And he's been awful. Now, I've been against it because I felt like the last thing I wanted to do to Devin Williams was to take him out of the closer role. It's one thing if he's been here. It's one thing if he's built up, you know, some cachet or some significant, you know, something with the fans who clearly are chanting "We want Weaver" at the end of the game Friday night. Like, it would be one thing if he had some stability here and you could go back to him and, like, you have no track record here. He's been one of the best closers in all of baseball. Like, that's not hyperbole. I still mean that. That's been the he's been a dominant reliever. Even off of last year, he had the back injury, and maybe that's playing a role in it. I don't know. But he came back from the back injury and was dominant. It was only like 25 innings or so, but dominant. As good as he's ever been at the end of last year. But he left them no choice. They had to move on from Weaver. And I'll tell you this, as much as I was against it, you have to do it. And more than that, there is no waiting for him to turn it around and then putting him back in the closer role. To me, this is it. This is now Weaver is the closer. And if Weaver blows that gig, then I can go back to Devin Williams if he finds it. But this is now just, listen, this is a one-year deal. Devin Williams is now out of the closer's role, and Weaver has it. And if Weaver runs with it, Weaver runs with it. That's it. Even if Devin Williams finds himself and gets back to being dominant, I am not changing things if Weaver is successful. That's it. So I fully expect, now I don't know what they got to do. He's throwing 97 miles an hour, so the fastball is there. He just can't locate it. And the changeup has gotten zero swing and miss. Zero. This is supposed to be one of the best pitches in all of baseball. And he is not getting any swing and miss on it at all. So I don't know what they're going to have to do, but the Yankees made the absolute right decision off of the debacle that was Friday night. I mean, if you think of how many games, think of how the Yankees would be playing right now. Yeah, they lost legitimately 2 out of 3 to Cleveland, but they would have swept Tampa Bay instead of winning only 3 out of 4, and they would have swept Toronto. He directly cost them 2 wins over the last week. And more than that, I don't know if it's the beard policy or whatever the case may be, he has looked disinterested. Now, say what you want, and you could say, oh, you know, it's he can't figure it out in New York, or we'll find out. Because I'll be totally honest with you, whether he's disinterested or not, whether he's unhappy or not, like he thought he was getting traded to the Dodgers, I don't know if he's unhappy here. Here's the point. He's about to hit free agency. I don't care how happy or unhappy he is. Nobody wants to head into free agency losing their closing role and having an 11 ERA. He's motivated to fix this. And he has been too good for too long not to fix it. I still believe very strongly that Devin Williams is going to be a key part of this team and a key part in any success they have because he has been too good for too long. I don't believe he's going to be an 11 ERA guy who can't get an out because he's uncomfortable in the bright lights of New York. I refuse to believe it. He might not have the same season he's had in his previous years, but he will get to a point where he can help the New York Yankees, and they're going to need it. Even though they're getting Loaisiga back soon, this bullpen will need Devin Williams. But having said that, even though I fully expect him to come back, I'm not giving him the closer role unless Weaver blows it. I feel like this Weaver's earned it. He's pitching lights out. He came in again yesterday, and the game was, you know, 5-1. It wasn't even a save situation, but it was easy. He has now pitched 12 innings and hasn't given up a run. He pitched them into the World Series as the closer. That's it. Now, he's the guy. If Devin Williams gets back, great. 7th and 8th inning. The only way he gets his closer role back is if Weaver loses it. That's it. And having said that, though, I'm sorry. I have to push back on all the crazies. You cannot kill this trade. Brian Cashman traded nothing. Nestor Cortez, who was on the 60-day IL with the same injury he had last year. He wasn't going to be a part of this team. He traded a prospect. None of you knew his name before 3 months before the season. They traded absolutely nothing for one of the best relievers in baseball. Stop telling me it's a terrible trade and only an idiot would have made it. It was a great trade, and it hasn't worked out yet. But I fully expect it to. And listen, they gave him no choice. I know I was kicking it down the line. I don't like having this guy come over, being one of the premier closers in all of baseball for years, being one of the best relievers in baseball longer than that, coming over to the new team, and immediately, within the first nine outings, taking him from a role that he has earned for the last 3 years in a new spot where clearly he's uncomfortable. I didn't want to do that to him. They left him no choice. He left the Yankees absolutely no choice. They had to do it.
Catch all the play-by-play with Susan Waldman and Dave Sims on the home of Yankees Radio, The Fan.
All right, 450, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Give me a call. We'll do rapid-fire style as we take it till 5 a.m. in the warm-up show. But I do want to just talk about the Mets, as well as we talked about the Yankees bullpen, which has been pretty damn good other than Devin Williams, who has lost his closer role. I was against it, but they left him no choice. I tried to hold it off as long as I could, but the body language that he presented the other night, Friday, just he literally looked like he didn't want to be there. The Mets would like to be there, but unfortunately they're having some issues. They blow the game, obviously, as Stanek blows the game, 2 in the last 3 days, but ultimately the issue isn't necessarily that. The issue is this bullpen, which has been amazing, and they're still getting the rotation. I mean, it's every night. I'm waiting for the clunker. It's unbelievable. This rotation is outrageous. And you're again, I mean, McGill strikes out 9 guys in this game and pitches 6 1/3, ends up giving up 3 runs, but like he's got 19 strikeouts in his last 2 games. Griffin Cannon gets out of every... It doesn't matter who he has to strike out, whether it's Bryce Harper or it's Nick Castellanos or it's Schwarber. Like, he strikes out whoever he needs to get out of jams. He gives you five innings, less than 2 runs, almost every time out. Clay Holmes has transitioned into a starter far better than I could ever have imagined. I still think he's going to probably hit a wall at some point just because he continued to do this. They haven't even gotten, you know, Manaea back from injury yet. The rotation keeps you in every game. They are not going to go on long losing streaks, no matter what the scenario is in the bullpen with starting rotation like this. I mean, we can question the offense, and sure, Juan Soto has not been Juan Soto. He loses the ball in the sun yesterday that led to the beginning. He's been disappointing. Had an ability to make a catch the other night against the wall and a tough catch, but it's in and out of his glove. I don't think defensively that's a major issue just yet. This one, he lost the ball in the sun. It's not bad defense. It is what it is. But he has clearly not been Juan Soto yet, but it's not the offense. It's not anything else other than the starting rotation is what's giving this Met team an ability to be 10 games over 500, even with the last 2 nights. But the bullpen now, we are finally seeing some warts with this team somewhere. And a lot of it was with injury, obviously, as Minter now goes down with a lat strain. We'll see how long he's out. You've got Diaz, who clearly, even though he's not been the same pitcher he was in 22, is a linchpin for this bullpen and is the guy they need and rely on. And without him, now, again, he's fine. He got himself into a little bit of trouble the other day, but he preserved that 2-run lead in the 9th to get the save. But he's going to be less available. He's dealing with some sort of hip issue, and he was unavailable last night. Who knows how often he's going to be available? We have to see him pitch back-to-back days now before you can trust that he'll do it. And Buteau, who was a weapon for them last year, has been probably the weakest link in this bullpen and had another miserable outing yesterday. So as many good answers as they've had, as Brazoban has been, as even Daniel Young has really stepped up and been really good as the second lefty coming out of the bullpen, but now with the Minter injury, we'll see what happens there. I mean, they've done a really remarkable job in this bullpen. Reed Garrett has been as good as he was at the start of last year. So, I mean, this pitching staff, top to bottom, soup to nuts, starter to reliever, has been incredible. But right now, they are a little thin there. They have an injury to Minter, and Diaz is kind of unreliable, and Buteau has not been good. So they blew 2 games in this series, 2 walk-off wins, losses rather, excuse me. This one, they blow a 6-run lead. This is the game that you really can't lose. Like, this is the one that's really the first real gut punch. being up 6 runs to the Nationals, you do not expect to lose that game. And then, to top it off, the situational hitting, and this lineup really still an issue. Like, it's had its moments, and obviously Alonso and Lindor helping carrying the team, and you get the walk-off win from Marte, and, you know, you're still waiting on Juan Soto to come through, and I expect this team to figure it out. Alvarez comes back, hits a 2-run home run. McNeil's back now from injury. They sent down Beatty, which I didn't agree with. You know, I thought he was turning the corner. I would rather have seen him than the other option they decided to keep, but we'll see about that. But this offense still really hasn't gotten going. But the first real wart of the team right now is Buto, the back end of this bullpen, the unavailability of the closer on a nightly basis, and now the injury to Minter. Like, starting to feel a little bit less confident about a bullpen that has been unbelievably good for the Mets. And then you get to the situational hitting. Like I said, the lineup hasn't been great, but they've been able to come through in the biggest of spots, get wins in this game. They have an opportunity, especially with the situation, as we just talked about, the bullpen, and they know that what we didn't at the time is that the closer's not available. They have runners at second and third and nobody out. They get the wild pitch that moves them up to second and third, and they get 3 consecutive ground balls to the infield and are unable to come through with that bonus run, and then it kills them in the ninth as Pete Alonso, who's been brilliant defensively. Brilliant. I've been very impressed. I've talked about Pete's defense. I think this year he's playing the best defense to go along with obviously having a career year offensively, but his one and a bugaboo, he's terrific with the scoops. He's been bad with some throws to the pitcher, and he overthrows a ball and allows the final run to score. But to me, that game is lost when they're unable to come through in that moment in the ninth. And, you know, you could have possibly brought in Winker to pinch hit for Marte. You know, Fliegelman kind of thought that was an issue. They asked the Mendy in the post game. And he was talking about the cutter and getting contact, because you're only looking for contact in that moment. You're not necessarily looking for the base hit. You're just looking to drive the ball. But this team has come through in the biggest of moments. It's tough to get a 2 losses like this in the span of 3 days. But ultimately, like, they've been playing so well. These are still, you know, for the most part, crisp games, and you're getting great starting pitching. When that falters is when I would start to be not concerned, because I think the team is very good and the lineup's been good, and I still think they'll be fine. And we expected, I mean, no, how could you expect this pitching staff to continue like this? But that's when I would really start to think about the other issues I have on the team. Right now, I am so gung-ho and positive about the rotation and what it's doing on a daily basis. It's never ending. And as long as they are on this heater with their starting rotation, I'm not overly concerned about this team, because I think they're going to pitch well enough to give themselves a chance. And we still haven't even seen the best of Juan Soto. And, like, this has now gone on longer than I would have thought. And he did have a couple hits in this game. He got on base. He was at third base at the end of the game, and they were unable to drive him in, which I saw some people upset about not running on contact. We've seen the Yankees run on contact and cost them run after run. Like, Juan Soto's not exactly fleet of foot. And I don't know if I want to be going on contact with, especially the way this offense has been able to be opportunistic. I'm not going to take that chance. But as long as they're pitching like this, I expect Juan Soto to figure it out relatively quickly. You've got Lindor and Alonso hot. I really only have a concern right now about some of the injury issues and the depths of the bullpen. But right now, this rotation that's going to get Manaea back eventually is too good to go on long losing streaks. And right now they've built up a lead in the division. They've got their 10 games over 500, and it's really hard, even with even blowing a 6-run lead, it's hard to get that upset with the Mets right now. It really is. It's hard to be overly concerned. That's it for me. We still have plenty of time. We'll get more into the specific picks in the draft of the Giants and Jets as we get through the week. More baseball tonight. Mets finishing up a series against Washington, and the Yankees take on the last place Baltimore Orioles. We got the Knicks on Tuesday. A lot going on here in the world of sports. Everybody enjoy the rest of your Monday. The 5-hour midnight ride has reached its end. Everybody exit carefully. Watch your step. Fleegs, thank you. Thank you guys for calling. I appreciate it. The warm-up show is next. I'll catch you guys tomorrow, 2 a.m. I am out of here. Bye-bye.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.